You are all aware of the fact that I always opt to speak last for a few reasons. One is that if the person that is speaking prepared to say what I prepared, it's easier for me to think of something else than for them to think of something else if I already said it. And the second reason is I like to always have the last word, so I like to speak last. But I'm not speaking tonight. So therefore, I am going to speak before the guest speaker and to turn the tables on him. Because he always prides himself that he is asked to introduce me every year at the Men's Lashon Hara Fest. And recently in Chutz Laaretz. But here he can't possibly introduce me because people know better, and what he said they know that doesn't apply. In any case, I have the chance now to introduce him. Before I do that, I just want to give Rafael Norden a yasher koach. Years ago, he came with this idea of having a Mishnah Yomi, and I told him that I can't guarantee I'll be here every night of the week to give Mishnah Yomi, and therefore we decided that I wouldn't give the shiur, and it would be given by other people. And Baruch Hashem, I want to give a yasher koach to all the people who volunteered to give this shiur. But because of him, I also learn Mishnah Yomi. Whenever I can be at the shiur, I stay for the shiur. But the truth is that since my heart attack years ago, I am a month ahead of Daf Yomi. I'm in the end of Shavuos. They're probably still in Makkos, I'm a month ahead in Mishnah Yomi. So I'm already in the second parak of Peya, and you're just finishing Guktsin. I don't know exactly why I did that, but I guess that at least this way, during Shloshim, at least I'll be finished with the Daf Yomi for 30 days if I happen to have to leave this world. So that's a 30-day extension. But because of that, they once gave out calendars here that have Mishnah Yomi, Nach Yomi, Halacha Yomi. So I started learning all of those too. And all because of Rafael Norden. So I want to thank him for both for the Tzibur and for personally also. And also the Yasher Koach to all those who have volunteered to give this year. It's not easy to prepare Mishnayos, even if you only give it once or twice a week. And Mirz Hashem, it's very nice to see all the people who came in support of the people who come to the shiur. Right? Halavai, we have all these people at the shiur every night. Maybe for the next Marzor, that's what's going to be. But even if not, coming in the honor of people who learn is also an important thing. Giving kavod to people who do learn Mishnayos. Just the mile of learning Mishnayos is 2 miles. One is that if you look at the Hakdom of the Tosus Yontif to the Mishnayos, he says that by learning Mishnayos, especially with a Perush, at least with the Rav, personally I learned with the Tosus Yontif also, you are basically learning all of Shas. Because the problem of learning Mishnah is you don't know who the Halacha is like and whatever. When you have a Perush, and usually the Rav says, V'ein Halacha Kamoso, or Halacha Kamoso, you've learned all of Shas by learning Mishnayos. So you get a total picture of everything. And that's a very important thing. And your Yotzei, the mitzvah of learning, called Torah Shebal Peh, which is a chiyuv, everybody has to learn all of Torah Shebal Peh. And by learning Mishnayos, you do that. And secondly, it's an idea of consistency. An idea of the chinuch in this Hakdama brings down a machlokas, what is the ikur pasuk in the Torah? V'yohavta re'acha kamocha, or zeh sefer kol desadam. And one of the Tanoim said the ikur pasuk is, esakeves echad taseh v'boker, esakeves hasheni taseh bin harboi. The idea is consistency. Day in, day out, and that's the way the Mishnayos is, day in and day out, without a stop. And people really learn those Mishnayos and understand the Mishnayos for the most part, and both of those things are very important. think that to a certain degree that is an introduction to the guest speaker, who I always enjoy listening to. I have the opportunity many times to listen to him, and have urged the community to invite him so I can have more opportunity. First of all, he's a person that in the larger picture has a lot to say, and things that I agree with very much so in the principles and the ideas that he brings out, and the consistency, right? I've never yet heard him in a play that I didn't enjoy. And Lamaisa, his delivery, right, on the outside is very, very enjoyable, but sometimes you get a lot more musser with a Purim Dika Nigin than with a Tisha B'Av Nigin. So learning Mishnayis is one of the things that will get us out of Golus. Ki yitnu bagoyim ato akapsein. Therefore, during the 3 weeks, a very positive thing to have a Siyum Mishnayis. And also the B'dichusa D'Oraisa, the Simchas HaTorah that Rabbi Arlovsky exudes, right, will be a good ingredient to make the 3 weeks a little bit more bearable with Simchas HaTorah. And without further ado, I have the pleasure of introducing David Arlovsky.
Thank you very much. The truth of the matter is that me and Rabbi Leff were together at the Project Inspire convention, and he spoke first, I spoke afterwards, and I said over there in America, I said, listen, you know, I don't want to speak too much about Rabbi Leff, because what I do for a living is I introduce Rabbi Leff to audiences all around Eretz Yisrael, and I don't want to waste any of my material on you. And the truth of the matter is, I have a much easier job than Rabbi Leff had, because I only have to introduce Rabbi Leff. He has to try to introduce me, you know? So he doesn't have that much to work with. So, you know, it's a tremendous course. And I have to tell you that it makes me a little nervous. You know, it's a little nervous for me to have to speak in front of Rabbi Leff. When I get nervous, I have a bad habit, you know, I tend to eat. Someone said to me, you must get nervous a lot. And so I want to give a tremendous thank you to whoever organized the food and put this suda together. It was really beautiful and exceptional, and certainly a tremendous kavod. And that's the second reason that I'm a little nervous. Because to appreciate this, you have to understand, I learned in Yeshiva Chafetz Chaim. If there's nobody here who's familiar with Yeshiva Chafetz Chaim, they say the reason that a Gemara starts on Daf Beis is that the guys in Chafetz Chaim will feel like they covered ground. You know? They say, how come the first word in Masechta is in a box? They said, so that guys in Chafetz Chaim can pace themselves. You know what I mean? Are you out of the box yet? You know what I mean? It's still Elul. You know what I mean? You know? So to try to run through a piece of Gemara or Mishnah it has always been anathema to me my entire life. And I started this year, this cycle in Brachos Daf Yomi. And you can understand that this has just put me into absolute overdrive, you know what I mean? To try to get through an entire blot, you know, in only one day, you know, is really quite an accomplishment. You know, usually that's a zman, you know, and to have to try to get through it every single day. And, you know, I describe my experience as sort of sitting on a train looking out the window as the scenery, you know, zooms by. And I just keep turning the dafim, you know what I mean? As I keep zooming past, you know, and picking up whatever I can along the way. So someone said to me, this is so not you to sit and do Daf Yomi. I mean, this is just not, you know. I said, I know. He said, so what inspired you? I said, I'll tell you the truth. After this last Siyum HaShas, I looked at all the parties. And I looked at all the celebration. I looked at all the Siyumim. And I looked at all the people who were coming to speak and to participate. And I was like, gee, I'm missing out on this. I also want to be a part of the party at the end. Now the emphasis is when we say at the end of a Masechta, we list the 10 sons of Rapapa. Rami Rapapa, Sorcha Rapapa, we go through all the names. And it's brought down, it's because Rapapa, whenever there was a Siyum, he would provide the beer. That was That added to the festivities, as you can imagine. And why? It says, because the whole purpose of a Siyum is to inspire people. Yeah, I want to be a part of that too. So the whole Siyum this evening is here for one purpose. This is an infomercial. The whole purpose is to try to be able to get more people to be able to participate. You know? Now, when you consider that you're dealing with over 20% of the Moshav has participated in this, which is an unbelievable accomplishment. You know? I'm sure more people have already said they're signing up and more people are joining, you know? And this is the kind of appeal that, you know, that's easy to make. Because we don't want your money, you know? No, that's not really true. We do want your money, but we also want your time. We want your commitment. And I have to tell you that as you try to keep up every single day, it is such a Herculean task. You know? You travel, you go here, you take care of this, you know, and you miss one day, you say, I'll make it up. And as you make it up, you fall further and further behind, you know? And after a while, you think you'll never dig yourself out of it. Someone said Daf Yomi is an unbelievable thing because of it. Hundreds and hundreds of people had finished Gemara Brachas. You know, because after that, you start falling further and further behind, and then you get sick during Erev and forget about it. There's not a chance you'll ever find your way back. So to keep doing it every single day is such an unbelievable accomplishment. So whatever we do this evening, hopefully will be something that, you know, we'll be able to accomplish. You know, it'll inspire us to go on. And the truth of the matter is, it's, you know, often 10 minutes after davening, they say. You occasionally get an unusually long Mishnah, but for the most part, it's 10 minutes. 10 minutes a day. It's an amazing thing. Moshe Shapiro used to make a siyum with the guy who drove him to Shachris. They would learn at the traffic lights. And they would finish Masechtas. Which is an absolutely amazing concept, because it means it's the little time in the day. We know how much time we waste during the day, you know. A little time during the day where there's just opportunities to be able to pick things up. So, you finish Shas in Taurus. And you finish Taurus with Uksin. The obvious reason being that if you stuck this towards the beginning, nobody would ever finish Shas, right? You get to the end, then you get into all the Tumah and Taira, then you finally end with Stems, which is just so a rip-roaring time, you know what I mean? That, you know, that you just, if I touch the fruit here, I touch the fruit there, is this a stem? Is that a stem, you know? So the last Mishnah apparently is, what's the din of honeycombs? When does a honeycomb, right, the liquid inside the honeycomb become ready to become a mashke? Machlekes beis Hillel and beis Shammai, is it when you either smoke out the bees, or according to one Girsa, you decide, or is it when you, Beis Hillel says, when you slit them open to be able to take out the honey, right? That's really the end. And then we come back with this other Mishnah, right? Says Shimon Levi, every tzaddik and tzaddik is going to get 310 worlds. It's a kind of strange concept. Oh, Yesh. Yesh is 310, right? 310 worlds, which is a very difficult concept. What does it mean to have 310 worlds? So instead, I'm going to talk about the parsha, Matos Maaseh, because the man's got to know his limitations. Not to say that honeycombs and 310 worlds is not interesting. Don't get me wrong. This is a double parsha, Matos Maaseh. With this, we finish up Sefer Bamidbar. Matos Maaseh is a general principle, and that is that every parsha has a theme, at least one theme. Sometimes it has more than one theme. But when you have a double parsha, it means that there has to be a general theme that joins the two themes together. Right? So that there's a theme in Matos and a theme in Maaseh, and something brings the two of them together. And there's a lot of different ideas in Matos Maaseh. How does it start with? Nedarim. And it's a somewhat technical thing. What are we waiting till now to bring in the words, the laws of Nedarim? Rashi brings one approach. A friend of mine has a different approach, and he says that there's no way that a person is going to just sit and learn all the halachas in the Torah. So what they do is they put in a story, and then when you're not looking, they stick in a bunch of laws. You know what I mean? They do this in Parshas Korach, you're going through the whole nice story, and then in the end, you suddenly get hit with all the, you know, Matonis Kahuna. Bam! You know what I mean? It's an interesting principle. And that's the idea, so you don't notice it so much. Well, Havdil Elif Havdolis, the conservatives a few years ago came out with the family Bible where they took out all of the boring parts, like Vayikra. You know what I mean? Like, you know, all those halachas that slow down the stories, you know, just they edited it for what people are more interested in. I don't know if Nedarim made it in. Not because it's not gripping, but, you know, you make this kind of Nedarim, that kind of Nedarim, they said. Whatever Matos Maaseh is, Nedarim is the introduction to it. Yeah? So I want to bring two ideas. One from Parshas Matos and one from Parshas Maaseh. In Parshas Matos, they capture Eretz Yisrael. Not really Eretz Yisrael, Eber Yarden, the land of Sichon and Og, and they have the whole Eber Yarden. And it says, Reuven and Gad have Mikna Rav, they have a lot of cattle. And they come to Moshe and they say, we have a lot of cattle, and this is cattle country. And so we would like to stay here and not pass over the Yarden. Moshe says to them, what? You're not going to go and help your brothers fight? You're going to, you know, show that you're scared and drop out? He said, no, we'll go and fight. We'll go and participate. But we don't want our Chelek in Yisrael. We want to stay here. Says the Yalkut Shimoni. What does that mean? Where is this coming from? And he brings the Pasuk back in Vayetze. Yeah? It says that Reuven goes out the Yivei Ksir Chitim, the time of the wheat harvest, and he sees Dudoyim, and he brings them for his mother. That's the Pasuk the Yalkut Shimoni quotes over here. And then he says, and that's what Shlomo Melech means when he says, Chanoch Lana Al Pi Darko, teach a child, and he'll never forget it. So what's going on over here? So my first Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Chait Zatzal, Chavetz Chaim set up shot. Maybe before I give that shot, I want to jump to Parshas Maaseh. What's the next thing we have dealing with Eber Yarden? We have the din of somebody who kills B'shogeg, and he goes off to the Ari Miklat. There are 6 Ari Miklat, 3 of them in Eretz Yisrael for 9.5 Shvatim, and 3 of them in Eber Yarden. Why? Why there's so many? Evidently there were more murderers on Eber Yarden. Well, that's not really going to help us, because you don't go to the Uri Miklat if you killed somebody. You only do it if you kill a B'shogeg. If you're a Rotzeach, if you're a murderer, they kick you out. You can't go to Uri Miklat if you're a murderer. What's that to do with the fact that I wasn't being careful when I was climbing down the ladder and I fell on somebody? Well, the axe head flew off of the axe. You know? It's an accident. So what does Uri Miklat have to do with that? Those are the two ideas I want to bring together. So Rabbi Chay says like this. What was Reuven? When Yaakov Avinu looks over his brothers to give him a bracha, and when you look at Reuven and Shimon and Levi, it's hard to talk about a bracha. Reuven Levi says to Reuven, Pachas Kamayim, you're totally unstable, you're losing the kahuna, you're losing the malchus, and you're losing the bechayim. Shimon Levi, you guys are angry, I hope my name doesn't get added into you guys, and you guys should be spread out across Klal Yisrael. And so Levi doesn't get a chelek in Eretz Yisrael. It says, from Shimon come all of the teachers of Torah and all of the poor people, which to me sounds a little redundant. But but and so therefore you'll be spread out all across, you know, all across Eretz Yisrael. That's not much of a bracha. I was speaking to a yeshiva recently, and I said, it's the best of bracha, but you'll never get it. I'm sorry to say. I said, I come from a different generation. When I was growing up, if you were acting like an idiot, your Rebbe said to you, stop acting like an idiot. And you did. And we never thought about it. But that's because they hadn't yet discovered self-esteem. I didn't know that he had destroyed my self-esteem. Because if you tell me to stop acting like an idiot, obviously I lose my self-esteem. That was discovered years later in the 80s or 90s. And I mean, when I went to school, they didn't have DNA, so I can imagine. But no wonder there was no self-esteem, you know. But now, if you say to a kid, stop acting like an idiot, he says, how can you say it to me? You're destroying my self-esteem. So you can never tell somebody that they're wrong. I once had one of the first times I was ever teaching, it was in a seminary I was substituting, and I asked a question of Greg Vanessa. I said, no, that's wrong. She said, how can you say that to me? Don't you know that I'm in therapy? I was like, gee, I'm sorry. He goes, well, you just invalidated me. I said, but what are you, a parking meter? I'll put in another quarter, you know what I mean? Oh, forget it. I just lost her. The whole girl said, that's so disgusting. I believe he said that. You know, like all that. So now it doesn't matter what anybody says. I say, that's an interesting approach. Maybe there's a different answer, which doesn't involve God sending down his son to die for us. But I don't want to tell anybody they're wrong. You tell anybody they're wrong, they're full of fun, you know? I said, so let's say there's something really wrong with you. So when I was lucky, I went to yeshiva, and everybody would say, there's something really wrong with you. Straighten out. And we did. Now you have to say, no, it's very nice, it's very good. I know it's beautiful you came to davening one time this week, and that's very good, and we're going to build on that. Build on that, and I think we can take a step forward, you know. Whereas my Rebbe says, what's wrong with you? Why don't you come to davening? Get up in the morning, I'll kill you. Okay. Gosh, if I only knew about self-esteem then, what I could have accomplished with my life. That's what Yaakov Avinu is doing. I'm giving you the best of bracha. I'm telling you what's wrong with you and what you need to be mitaking. Then what does he say to Reuven? Pachas Kamayim. You have a certain impetuosity. He sees this from the Maisa Bila, where he got upset at his father and he did something that was wrong and he spent the rest of his life regretting it and the rest of his life doing tshuva. And his father says to him, you have to work on this. So he changed the pshat of this medrash, and it's different from most of the mafarshim. He said, what happened? Reuven is going out bizman k'tir chitim. He's going out to harvest the wheat. What are you doing? I'm harvesting wheat. That's the time now. I got a job. I got a sickle. We're all set to go. I'm going out to harvest the wheat, and I see these flowers by the side of the road. And I say, you know, that would be good for my mother. I think instead I'll pick the flowers and bring them to my mother. Was it bad? Beautiful. Isn't that nice? The Dudayim go on his flag. That becomes the symbol of who Reuven is. You know who Reuven is? I'm going out to harvest the wheat and I see the flowers by the side of the road and I pick them for my mother. And that's who I become. Hanoch l'naro p'darko. That's what I teach down to my children. That what is filtered down. Something so small. Something so small. I say it over. You've heard it 1,000 times, I'm sure. You know what I mean? But it was one of the things that made such a dramatic impression on me, and I always feel like I need to say it over at any opportunity I do. Rabbi Leff said this beautiful shot. Like I said, I'm sure you've heard it. If Reuven had known what the Torah would have said, that he saved Yosef, if Boaz would have known that it said that he gave Rus a meal, he would have given him a meal like Shlomo Melech. If he would have, you know, Aaron would have known it said he was happy in his heart, you know. So he said, I've heard 3 different shatim on this, but the third one, you know, really hit me, you know. It says, because we say things all the time. We do all the things all the time, but we don't know what's significant. Yitzchak was 75 years old when his father died. I'm sure they had many conversations during a lifetime. The Torah records one. Where's the sheep? You're the sheep. That's it. We don't know how. Good morning. How you doing? You know what I mean? You want to go for a walk? How you feeling today? You know what I mean? Let's learn something. Nothing. That's the entire exchange that's recorded in the Torah. Because we don't know what we say that is incredibly significant. We don't know what the Torah is going to record as being extremely important. Reuven is going out to harvest the wheat. He sees the flowers. He picks the flowers. Comes the Medrash Yalkut Shimoni to tell us on this week's Parashah that idea was magnified in his children to the point that they're on their way to Eretz Yisrael. We've been traveling for 40 years to get to Eretz Yisrael. We come there every year then. This is nice. I'll stay here. Want to go to Eretz Yisrael? Nope. Why don't you come and fight? Sure, we'll go fight. We'll go fight. We'll go right into the front to fight. Okay, that's good. You know? So what are you going to do here? I'll build pens for my animals and cities for my children. No, no. Build cities for your children, pens for your animals. Take your time. Think about it. You're acting very quickly. Now, there's a rule. You know? I think it was Mark Twain who said, people who tell the truth have less to remember. You know what I mean? You know, you start telling stories, and then somebody says to you, "Oh, so your wife's feeling better?" "Yeah, yeah, yeah." "What does she have?" "Strep." "Strep? Oh yeah, and it got better that quickly?" "Yeah." "No, yeah, yeah, there's no antibiotic now. It cures it in an hour." "So, oh yeah, really? Yeah, okay." "'Cause I saw her shopping." "Yeah, she's a martyr. She just keeps going." You know, there's like one story on top of another, on top of another. You know what I mean? You know, people who are impetuous spend a lot of time regretting. The result of being rash is that you end up regretting what you did, and it takes time. And now you have to stop and think about it. And now you have to, I forgot who it was who said, keep your words soft and sweet. They'll be easier when you have to eat them later. You know what I mean? You know? And you stop to, you know, and you say something, then you have to undo it. Those of us who are parents know this quite well. You know what I mean? Because teenagers, they don't react to what you say. That doesn't mean they don't hear it. We think they don't, you know, when you're a younger parent, you think they don't hear it. So you think if you keep repeating it in a louder voice and you keep upping the ante, that then it'll eventually get a reaction, but it doesn't. But they remember everything you say. And then they throw it back in your face later. So it's always better just to make your statement once and drop it. You think nobody heard? They heard. You know? And then afterwards, you know, you say one thing, you say, "Oh, you know, I love you so much." "Really? That's funny, because you said, I'm the worst child you ever had." "No, I didn't mean that." "Oh, and you also said..." "Oh, yeah, well, I think you took that out of context." "Yeah, and also you said..." "Yeah, well, I didn't think you were listening." You know? And then you're sitting there going, "Amana, you know what I mean? Why? Because we said something and we didn't really mean it. You know how hard it is to take back words? Almost impossible. Sometimes there are actions that we do and we just can't undo them, and we really feel bad about it. What are you going to do? What are you going to feel really bad about it? Oh well, too bad. You know, I said something to somebody, that person said it to somebody else, the guy lost his job. "Gee, I'm really sorry. Thanks. Thanks. You know, I wish there was something I could do about it." "Yeah, but there's not, is it?" "No." "Okay. You know, thanks a lot. Why don't you think next time?" And if you do things without thinking, if you're impetuous, it leads to charata. It leads to regret. What does regret come from? Regret comes from the fact that we're not really thinking about what we're doing. Now, that will bring you to tshuva. If you're lucky, it'll bring you to tshuva. If you really regret it. Reuven spent the rest of his life doing tshuva. He missed Mechiras Yosef. He was out doing tshuva, according to Rashi. Says the Ramban at the beginning of Bamidbar, when he's explaining why every shevet is set up, he says, Reuven goes in the south, because that's where the rain comes from, that's where the good things come from, the south. And since Reuven is Midas HaTshuva, tshuva brings the bracha to the world. The whole essence of shevet Reuven became tshuva. Why? Because since he does things impetuously, he then regrets it, and the regret brings you to tshuva. How does tshuva work? I'm quoting out of the Masilas Yesharim in Perek Daled, where he says, okay, I feel bad. You killed somebody, I feel really bad about it. It doesn't bring the person back to life. How in the world can you do tshuva? And he says, tshuva is based on the following principle. Akiras ha-ratzon ka-akiras ha-maisa dami. What does that mean? I say, I hate you and I can't stand you and I'm going to kill you, and I pull out my gun. And the two witnesses pop up and they say, do you know that what you're doing is also from the Torah? Yes. You have to say yes or it doesn't work. Yes. Do you know that it's covered by the law of Lasirza? Yes. Do you know that you're going to get herig, which involves a slice in your head, which is almost always painful? Yes. And you're going to get killed? Yes. And we're going to testify? Yes. Bam. Okay? That's amazing. Alright? You pull out your gun, you say, you know, I'm going to shoot you. And the guy says, hey, don't fool around, because it doesn't have any bullets in it. Bam. That's called shogeg. I would say shogeg, curve amazing. You know what I mean? But pretty stupid, right? I didn't mean to kill him. So third example, somebody tosses me the someone tosses me the gun and it goes off, bam, kills the guy. The guy just said, here, catch my gun, bam. That's onus. Onus means it really wasn't my fault. I had a Rebbe in high school who said to me once, everybody has a purpose in life, yours is to be a bad example. And I really tried to take this to heart and live up to that. So in my misspent youth, one of the things that I saw was, it was on public television, so it was okay, it was called Monty Python. It was this English comedy group, and it was on educational television, so I knew it was okay. Anyway, so they have this one skit, which made such an impression on me. This guy is brought into this giant manor house, you know, and he says, Lord, Wilkinson will be with you in a moment, And as he's standing there, suddenly this painting falls off the wall, and it crashes. And the butler walks in and goes, it fell by itself. By itself, sir? Yes. Okay, just wait, I'll get the maid. He's looking at the painting, and suddenly the desk splits in half and collapses. The butler comes in, sir, it happened by itself. Yes, sir. The maid is coming. The maid comes and says, look at this mess, I can't believe it, you know what I mean? She's picking up stuff, she hands him the letter opener, she says, here, hold this. She trips and falls on it, and she falls back. And the guy walks in, she's dead, he's holding it. She fell by herself, And they call in the police, and suddenly the bookcases fall on top of them, And he's walking, everything he passes explodes and bursts into the sea, I feel that way sometimes. Because I was the onus, I didn't do anything, right? That's called a schlamazel. Right? Shlemazel, I didn't do anything. A shlemiel spills the soup, it falls in the shlemazel. I didn't do anything, I just happened to be there. It's bad luck, That's the nature of it. I'm an onus, it's not my fault at all. Kol Shabbos, I say, I don't care about Shabbos, I'm turning on the light. Two witnesses to say, that's us, you're going to get, skeel, etc. Yeah, turns on the light, amazing. Person says, well, it's dark in here, you're flipping the light. He says, don't you know that it's Shabbos? I forgot. The person says, what are you doing? What do you mean? Don't you know it's Shabbos? Sure. You can't turn on a light. Really? Oh, man, I really should have gone to those halacha classes. I didn't know. Shogeg, bring your mechatas. Right? You're standing there and somebody pushes you against the light switch? The onus. In all three instances, I turned on a light. In all three instances, I shot somebody. But the difference is based on what my kavana was. What was I thinking? Says Mesil Shisharim, what you can do when you do tshuva is you made a decision to do something. But if you retroactively look back at it and regret it, but with a real regret. Not like we regret. You have people who say, I've always thought this was an amazing concept. There are people who say, I know what I did was wrong, I really shouldn't have done those things. I mean, I'm glad I did, I'm a better person because of it, And no, nobody really thinks that what I did was wrong if you say, no, I mean, obviously, it was a positive experience, I grew from the experience, I'll give you two horrific examples. Woody Allen once said, I want to leave you with a positive note, but I don't have one, so I'll give you two negative ones. Somebody invites you over to the house for a steak. You say, how was the steak? Delicious. You liked it? Yeah, it was good? Yeah. Just the way you like it? Yeah. It was your mother. I killed her and served it to you. So no one's going to say, oh my gosh. I mean, she tasted good. I can't say she didn't taste good. I got to tell you the truth. I mean, it was really probably the best steak I ever had. I mean, I feel bad it was my mom. Nobody's going to say that. Every time you think of it, you're going to be filled with such revulsion. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. That's so horrible. So I was teaching a seminar. I had one of those girls. You know those girls? You know already? The other ones are like, get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, like, look, it's morning. Let's open the window and get in the fresh air, So everything's Baruch Hashem, So she said, but Rabbi Arlovsky, if we do things wrong, don't you think we grow from the experience? Isn't it something positive, I said, okay, let me help you here, okay? Mirtz Hashem, you get married. Mirtz Hashem, right. Wonderful guy. And then, 5 years later, he has a confession, he hasn't been loyal. Oy vey, is it right? And he does tshuva, he goes to go for your counseling, etc., and you put it behind you. And years later, you ask him, so how do you feel about that? I feel terrible. look, I can't say that I didn't grow from the experience. Obviously, it was a positive experience. You know what I mean? You know, I said, what would you do at that point? And she said, I would kill him. I don't want to hear I grew from the experience. You know what I mean? If we really felt what we did was wrong, real charata, will we really chas v'shalom, if something really terrible happens? A person who does something really terrible lives with that for the rest of their life. Says Mesil Shasharim, then from the rutzon, there's no rutzon, there's only charata. From the hanah, there's nothing but tsar. The action doesn't, the rutzon doesn't exist anymore. He says, where do we learn this out from? From the Nedarim. Because Nedarim is a din in the Torah which says, I can create a new iser. Right? I get really upset at my neighbor, and I say, that's it, I'm never going into Bob's house again. That is a neder. If you go into Bob's house now, with Hasra and Adim, you get Malchus. You have created a new law of the Torah. Thou shalt not go into Bob's house. That's it. Your new commandment. A month later, your son comes home and says, Dad, this keeps me on Mazel Tov. He says, oh, Mazel Tov. So I'm engaged. That's beautiful. To who? Bob's daughter. Yeah, the L'chaim's tonight in his house. Isn't that nice? Oh, it's beautiful. I'll be right back. I speak to the Rav. Okay, I got a little bit of a problem. What? And I made a nether. We can go to Bob's house. No, you can't go to Bob's house. Yeah, but my son just got engaged to his daughter. I have a problem because divorce is tonight. That's a problem. So what do I do? If you knew that your daughter was going to get engaged if you knew your son was going to get engaged to Bob's daughter, would you make the nether? Absolutely not. The charata can remove the nether. If you really feel bad, mei kara, harata mei kara, I wish this had never happened, you can undo the nether. Even though the nether is something real, but you can undo it. You can change it. Says in the Masil Shasharim, that's what all of tshuva is based on. That's what we say, don't ask, you said picking of us, don't ask someone b'shas nidre. Are you sure? Did you think of this? Did you think of that? Did you think of this? Person's not thinking. Person who bites into a cherry and it's a disgusting cherry says, ugh, I'll never eat cherries again. He thought about that? He really weighed it through? No, it was an impulsive statement. We do things impulsively. We do things without thinking. Harbei Rotzchim Megillad. There were a lot of murderers in Gilad. What's the result of that? People aren't so careful about life. You know, we are not allowed to wear shoes with cleats on Shabbos. Why? Because one time people were hiding in a cave and some people walked by with cleats and they heard the sound inside of the cave and they thought the Romans were coming or the Greeks were coming and they ran out and they trampled people to death, and because of that, thousands of years later, we don't wear cleats. Because that's the sensitivity we have to human life. You know, I can't speak for anybody else here. I grew up in a home where there was TV. You know how many murders a kid watches? You know how many people you see get killed? Do you know sometimes it's a laugh line? When you get shot and it's funny, you know? Who has the sense of what it means? Of what the seriousness of it is? When life's not that important, then I'm not so careful. I didn't mean to kill the guy. I wasn't being careful. Yeah. Yeah. Now you want to just go back to your life and say it was an accident? No. You're going to leave your house. You're going to leave your family. You're going to go to one of your miklat. You have to reflect upon this fact that you took somebody's life. You know why? It wasn't an accident. You were negligent. It's not my fault, right? It's not my fault. There was a boy in the New York area, I don't want to mention the community. He turned 17, his father bought him a new car. And he within a week, totaled the car, smashed it into a tree. So his father bought him another car. And he was late for a hockey game. He had a friend in the car, and they were late for a hockey game. And he was zooming, and there was a lady in a crosswalk, and they hit him. If they had stopped and called for medical help, they could have saved her. As it is, she died. They went to a hockey game, and the friend was like beside himself. Hey, what are you, how did you do this? I went out for a movie. He came home and I couldn't sleep. He was like, and his parents said, "What's the matter? What's the matter?" And he told his parents. They called the police. They arrested the boy. The principal of the school came to me and asked me a question. "I know a judge. I might be able to help get this kid off. What do you think?" I said, "How many people does he have to kill before he has to face that what he did has serious consequences? You can't just kill somebody and go on. Isn't this serious?" One of the rebbeim in his school spoke about, you know, how serious this was, and the father came down to the school demanding that the rebbe be fired. It was an accident. He didn't mean to kill him. It's an accident. How could you hold him responsible? It's not my fault. It's not my fault. People who do things without thinking, they regret. Sometimes they have to regret for the rest of their lives. "I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking. I wasn't thinking." You know? I've heard several stories. Several stories. And chas v'shalom for me to judge anybody. Several stories of people who forgot babies in cars in the summer, and the kid died from the heat. The first time I heard that, I said to my wife, if it was me, they'd have to kill me. They'd have to kill me, or I'd have to kill myself. I couldn't go on. How do you go on? The regret would be so incredible. But it was, you know, got a bunch of kids. Yeah, they are. Okay, I ran NCSY on Long Island for 9 years, so I'm trained already in youth work. Whenever my family goes any place, I do head counts. I check with everybody is. You stay together. Nobody going ahead. Somebody's going ahead. Call them back. You know what I mean? We travel together in groups. Because I've been in this organization. You know what it is? Take that responsibility. I had a number of opportunities to. People wanted me to open up a seminary. I said, absolutely not. I'm happy to teach in them. I never want to run one. I said, what would I ever do if a parent calls me up at 2 o'clock in the morning and says, "Where's my daughter?" "She's in the dorm." "No, she's not." "I'll call you back." I want that on my head. You know? The responsibility that goes with it. And it happens all the time on trips and to your limb and stuff like that. Somebody forgets a kid behind. You know? They didn't make a head count. They did that. Make mistakes. But just to brush it off, it was an accident. No, accidents happen. What's the big deal? That charata lives with you for the rest of your life. And a person who's impetuous, they're not thinking. And very often, we don't have time to think, because we're very busy. And everybody's very busy. It's amazing how busy we are. My wife is always surprised. I like doing the dishes. Whenever I'm doing the dishes, she says, "You want me to take over?" I said, "No." Sometimes she pulls the sponge out of my hand. She saw I must hate doing dishes. I love doing dishes. You turn on the water, it's like being by the sea, you know what I mean? And it's a totally mindless job. There's nothing to do. First of all, it's easy to define. When you're in education, you never know, did I get through, did I not? Here you can tell, is the plate clean or not? You know what I mean? You can tell. There's a standard, you know what I mean? I said, but besides that, you could just sit there and think. It's a mindless job, and it gives you an opportunity to think. Where's the time for thinking? It's one of the worst things. I can't speak for everybody here, I can speak for myself. You know how hard it is to have kavanah during Shemona Esrei? It's the first quiet time I've had in my day. The whole room goes quiet. I'm like, oh yeah, I got to take care of this. Yeah, I got to go there. That's the reason you bang on your chest every now and then. Just there. Oh yeah, I'm dominating. You know, it's because you have a chance to think. People don't think. We're so busy. It's time to think. And because we don't think, most people don't do what they want. Noach Weinberg used to tell the story. You know, says this guy would come into yeshiva and he'd sit through a couple of classes and then he'd say, "No, don't you want to learn about Judaism? Don't you want to learn about life? Learn about happiness? Learn about meaning?" And he'd say, "Sure." You know? So he'd say, "Okay, so we'll sign you up for 6 months." He said, "I can't." He says, "You can't?" He says, "No, I got a ticket." He says, "You know, you can change tickets. It's done all the time." "Oh, I got a job, I got a girlfriend, I can't." He said, "You can't." He said, "What if I give you $100,000 to save for 6 months? Can you do it?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "But it's not that you can't. Say you don't want to." He says, okay, I don't want to. He says, how could you say you don't want to? You just said you want to learn about truth, you want to learn about life, you want to learn about happiness. Don't say I don't want to, say I don't feel like it. He says, okay, I don't feel like it. He says, then let me teach you the first thing about life. Don't do what you feel like, do what you want. And it's such a powerful thing. I have never felt like, you know, cleaning up after Shabbos. Never felt like it. I'll tell you even better than that. I've never felt like getting up in the morning. I have tremendous admiration for those people to whom it comes easily. It does not come easily to me. There's not one morning that I open up and I'm like, great, it's the morning. There are mornings that I drag myself out of bed, literally. Go to the bathroom, get myself ready, you know, wash up, come back, painfully get myself dressed, take my tefillin, walk out the door, and I'm still in bed. The whole thing was a dream. I never even got out of bed. What's happiness? I'll tell you what happiness is. Happiness is when they change the clock an hour behind, and you forget to change yours. I get up and like, oh, it's 6:30, I can't believe it. No, they change the clock, it's 5:30. A reprieve from the heavens, you know. Go back to bed, you know what I mean? It's hard. I never feel like getting up in the bed, but I want to. I want to. There was time when I was having a schedule where I left the house before 7 in the morning and came back after 10:30. I just went straight, place to place, thing to thing, you know. I'd come home at the end of the day, I just wanted to fall on the bed in a fetal position and whimper myself to sleep, you know? But my wife, who's been home with my dysfunctional children all day, wants to speak to me. Because but compared to them, I'm already a normal adult. It's one of the few venues that I have that status. I really don't, I just want to go inside, I'm exhausted, but I know that all it takes to have a marriage fall apart is to have people not care enough, not invest time in it. So I pull myself up because I don't feel like it, but I want to. Most people, this happens to be a very brilliant statement. I heard it once in my own name. One of the nice things of being my age is, you know, well, they say the first thing to go is your memory. The second thing is, anyway, but, so I say sometimes absolutely brilliant things and I immediately forget them. But the girls had hung up these things on a board once, you know, quotes, and I saw I was up there. I don't remember having said this, but it was in my name. So most people live the life that happens instead of the life they want. They just make another decision and another decision and another decision. They don't really think about it. And then they reach some point in their life and they look at what their life is. And as one person in his 70s said to me so painfully, I don't know what a meaningful life is, but this isn't it. Well, you hear people say, I wish I could live my life over again. So why didn't you live it that way the first time around? So I wasn't thinking. I did the next thing, I did the next thing, I did the next thing, and then it leads to regret. And so people go for the illusion. Go for the illusion. I'm sure you must have heard this one at some point. They bring out dessert. The person says, I'm going to hate myself tomorrow. In general, you should never do anything that will make you loathe yourself tomorrow. Why would you eat that piece of cake? Because in your mind, that piece of cake is the source of all happiness and pleasure in the world. It almost never is. That's the reality. Especially here, there's a general rule in Eretz Yisrael, the nicer it looks, the worse it tastes. Everybody knows that. You know? In America, you see this big fancy cake, and you go, oh, it's going to be delicious. Here, it manages to be dry and soggy at the same time, and it tastes like rum. You know what I mean? I don't know how they do that. The plain stuff is always better, you know? But they bring it out, and it looks so good, and there's a little voice inside of you saying, this will make you happy. This will give you what you want. This will make you who you want to be. It almost never lives up to the expectations. But the fantasy, the illusion? What's the opposite of illusion? Reality. Reality. What? Everybody should think about this. It's always worthwhile. If you saw Salanta says this is one of the things we should do before Rosh Hashanah, you know, it's in general good advice. What do you want to be at the end of your life? What's the life you want to look back on? Here's the absolutely most amazing thing. Most people who, if you ask them, how do they want to be remembered? What's the life they wanted to have led? They're not living that life now. It's a reality. It's unfortunate, but it's a reality. You know? Rabbi Lev had a schus that I never had. He was actually a rabbi of a shul. You know? And, you know, sometimes you have to get up and you have to speak about people. Could you imagine if we ever had a Levi and told the truth? Harry, he loves cigars. You always saw Harry with a cigar. He loved his cigars and a scotch. He wasn't one of these single malt guys, a shivas. If he had a shivas and a cigar and a newspaper, you'd see him with a newspaper and a cigar. He was the happiest guy in the world, you know what I mean? Now, Harry's got to be lying in his coffin going, I can't believe this. Isn't there anything else that I've ever done? No, Harry, there's not. I'm sorry. I really wish there was, you know what I mean? You know, I'm trying to think here, but you should have left me some talking points because we don't have too many. My father passed away, so we were sitting shiva. So I'm one of six boys of whom I'm the quietest, you can imagine. So four of them were upstairs, and me, I was sitting downstairs where in the basement we set up a little shul. I was there, and another brother sat down there too. You know, and you, when you're sitting shiva like this, you know, if you've been through it, you know, you hear what the other side is saying and different stories and things, you know. And at one point there was a break in the action, and my brother said to me, you know, Dad ran a florist shop for 50 years in Brooklyn. Nobody came to talk about that. They came to talk about this act of chesed he did, or this act of tzedakah he did, or this good thing that he did. And he said to me, most of what we do in our life is not remembered afterwards. And I said, you're right. And the difference between living an average life and an exceptional life is making most of your life those moments. Most of your life made up of those moments. Then you have reality. You know what the word is for reality? Yesh. Ohavai Yesh. V'yanchil Ohavai Yesh. You get 310 olamas. You know what those 310 olamas are? Yesh. It's a reality. You have something real. You know how many people at the end of their life are going to look back at the stuff that was so important to them? I got an email where you know, the person always, you know, puts a little quote at the end. It says, on your deathbed you won't say, I wish I spent more time in the office. You know? At the time, it's the most important thing. Things that are so important to us at the end of our life when we look back, but we don't think about it. Kol tzaddik v'tzaddik. You know how it ends? It ends arguing about honeycombs. Machlekes beis hillel and beis shammai. That's the end. Because kol tzaddik v'tzaddik are going to have a reality. You know what we're arguing about? I'm not arguing about whose kid walked in my flowers, and I'm not arguing about, you know, who didn't turn off the air conditioning, and I'm not arguing about, you know, who took this or what did this or how come you didn't take care of this and why am I the one always doing this. I'm arguing about Torah. I'm arguing about Nitzchias. I'm arguing about something important. Machlekes? Machlekes isn't the problem. Machlekes isn't the problem. The end of that, where it says called tzaddik v'tzaddik, which means every tzaddik who argues with another tzaddik is going to have all of the yesh, en kli machzik teira el shalom. There's something called peace. And shalom, oseh shalom b'mamav between eish and mayim, hu yaseh shalom aleinu. The shalom is something real, because we're arguing about reality. What do we leave off arguing about? Arguing about Torah. Dvash. Arguing about Dvash. Pasuk in Vayikra says, you're not allowed to bring any Dvash with your Kabbonos. The exception is the Bikurim on Shavuos. You can't have any Sa'ar. It represents Gaiva. Dvash represents Taiva. You can't have this in your Vodas Hashem, except the Shelechem that you bring on Shavuos. On Shavuos, you can have Sa'ar, you can have Chametz, and you can have Dvash. You know why? Because that's when the Torah is given. And if you have Torah, then you can even bring the Dvash, all the good things into the world. What's the number 310, says the Mishnah Achrona? 248 mitzvahs. 248 mitzvahs. But if you do it, says Rabbeinu Tam, he says, if you do it l'shma, May Ahava, so you do it, May Ahava, with love, so then you get a Chomesh. As we all know, when you add on a Chomesh, it's not a fifth, it's a quarter, it's a fifth part. And the Chomesh of 248 is 62. 248 and 62 equals 310. The 310 alumnus, you get it, the schar for everything you do, and the Chomesh, which is, you get to enjoy all the gashmis in the world too, all the honey, all the good things. Imagine you look back at a life and you say, I lived the best life that I could have led. I don't have any charata. You know why? Because I wasn't impulsive. I didn't just do things. I stopped and thought. And most people don't do that. But the Kiva Eger was going around to collect money. There was a big tzarach, and they knocks on one door, opens up, and there's a card game going on. So the Balabatim at the card game, they see Rabbi Kiva Eger, they're like, we're going to give you the money in the pot. They gather up the money and they give it to him, you know. You want a receipt? No, it's okay, you know. And he gets ready, he says, Rabbi, I have to say something. I said, Rabbi, it's okay, we were just killing time. He says, I know, but you remember a few months ago there was a Magefa in town? And I visited those people who were dying, what they wouldn't give for another day. And you've got so much life you can kill it. I'm just killing time. I'm just killing time. You know why we're here today? We're here today because some people figured out how not to kill time. 10 minutes at the end of davening. I don't want to talk to the Simon. I'm sure they're proud enough of themselves and they get the big suit and everything like that. I want to talk to everybody else, the average people like me. How come we don't stay for those 10 minutes after davening? Because I got to get home and I got to take care of this and I didn't have this and I have that. And I have 100 good reasons, not bad reasons, good reasons. But you imagine I stay for another 10 minutes and I finish Shas? 10 minutes? I can't speak for everybody here. I can honestly say for myself, I definitely do not maximize my time. There's plenty of time that I spend that is wasted in a day. Now, if I could take 10 minutes of that time and say I finished Shas, an unbelievable thing. The difference is, where does it come from? In Kelm, they used to have the famous 5-minute Seder. They'd give a clap, they'd stop for 5 minutes, people think I had a safer, you know. So Rabbi Beidou brought me out there. He says, you understand, everybody left does this all the time. And we learn a little Shmir Salash, we learn a little this, you know that. He takes it 2 minutes over here, 2 minutes over here, and then we keep finishing Svarim. Keep finishing Svarim. How? Ohav Ayesh. Because we have reality. Because we really have something. I was running NCSY in Long Island, and I hired a guy to be my Suffolk County coordinator. And at the end of the year, I sat down with him, and he had certain goals he was supposed to do, and he didn't do anything. And I said, so what happened? And he had this answer, and this answer, and this excuse, and this excuse, etc., etc. I said, no problem, but you know, when I go back to the OU, they're cutting your budget. Like, they're cutting you out. Because at the end of the day, you didn't produce anything. You haven't got a lot of good reasons why you didn't produce anything. And there are people in this world who always have good reasons why they didn't produce something. And they're good reasons. But you know what happens at the end? They don't have anything. So that's the challenge. As we finish Sefer Bamidbar and we go into Sefer Devarim, that's the challenge as we go into the 3 weeks, unless things change, heading towards the Churban. What happened? I wasn't thinking. I get to do the big ladies Shmiras HaLoshen in Binyan Umah. Every year they bring me in. They're hoping eventually to have some impact on me. So far they haven't. But you know, they're hoping at some point. And we always give all these different ideas. Try just for 5 minutes. Try for this. Try for that. But why don't we just have an hour a day? Why don't we just, you know? And I thought to myself one time, what if we said the following? You like the gullus? You know, the terrorist attacks, the bombs, the killing, the shooting, the disease, the death, you know, all the financial pain, all the terrible things. You like this? Or would you like the geula? Just keep your mouth shut! My wife talked me out of it, as she often does, thinking that I don't really have my finger on the pulse, and she's right. That approach obviously isn't going to work, but why doesn't it work? It's an illusion. We live illusion instead of reality. That's who we are. That's the life that we've chosen for ourselves. So, this is where we are now. We're heading towards a Churban. You know why? We chose something else. Not so worthwhile. Not so worthwhile. I want to end with a beautiful thought that I said once. I heard it on a tape. I was deeply moved. It's actually based on a mushel that I heard somebody on a chinuch tape say, and I adapted it for this purpose. You know, every Friday, the Abba would bring the Ima a beautiful bouquet of flowers, and she would put it in a beautiful crystal vase right next to the Shabbos licht. And it was so beautiful. Always the flowers every Shabbos. She has a little boy, 4 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old. And every Shabbos he sees this. And he says, I want to bring flowers for Ima also. He goes out to pick flowers. Ever see what a little kid picks, you know? Some dandelions, some weeds, a couple of those flowers dripping pollen, you know, a little grass, you know, to go with it. Says, look, Ima, I brought you flowers just like Abba. Now, really, Ima wants to throw this in the garbage, but she understands that the son wanted to do something very special, you know? So it doesn't look good in the crystal vase. She gets a styrofoam cup, you know, and arranges, you know, the little weeds and puts the little grass around it, you know, and puts it right next to the crystal vase. And the little boy's heart is bursting with pride. He's so happy. Weeks turn into months, and it's happened. Everything becomes rote. And one time he's outside playing with his friends on a Friday, and it's like, oh, I got to bring my mother flowers. And he runs over and grabs up a handful of weeds and runs into the house, slamming the door, because that's what little boys do, and throws it on the table and says, here, Mom, you want flowers? I got you flowers. The mother says, that's okay. Abba gets me flowers. I thought you wanted to bring them. I don't want you to feel obligated. You don't have to. That's okay. And she sweeps the weeds into the garbage, and she crumbles up the little styrofoam cup and throws it away. If the kid has half a brain, he understands he's the one who lost something. There was a time in Jewish history when we really wanted to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was really chashuv to us. We understood what reality was. We wanted to bring Hashem something. We were like, look Hashem, I brought you a sheep. Hashem's like, a sheep, that's very nice. You know what, I'm gonna build your base in Mikdash and bring the sheep over there. And for hundreds of years, we were so happy. We'd bring our sheep to the base of Mikdash, and we'd bring it, and we were so happy. And as the centuries went on, slowly it became rote. And we said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yeah, you want a sheep? Here's a sheep. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, that's okay, I've got plenty of sheep, and if I need more, I can always make them. So why don't you keep your sheep, you know? And he takes the base of Mikdash and crumbles it and throws it away. We're doing HaKadosh Baruch Hu a favor. Our Vayesh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is offering us reality. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is offering us permanence. And you know how you get it? 10 minutes a day. Something real that we can get, that step by step and day by day. People say to me, oh, I've got so many bad midos. How do you change? I said, when you get to be my age, and you tell time by decades. A little kid, you tell time by weeks, and you tell time by months, and then by years, now you tell by decades. When I was in my 30s, when I was in my 40s, you know, it's a whole different thing. You get a little perspective. I don't have to become perfect tomorrow. It might take me 10 years to be perfect. You know what I mean? It's okay. Hopefully I'm not going anywhere. You do it 10 minutes a day, 5 minutes a day. The next thing I say, the next decision I make, whatever I do has that power to change my life from a life of illusion to reality. I can live my life with regret. Can't believe I did that. What was I thinking? I wasn't thinking. Or I could live my life by thinking. I could live my life by saying, the next thing I do is important. What I have to say is important. I can make most of my life those moments. Moments that are reality. Moments that are going to make a difference to the world. It's a tremendous simcha. And the simcha is not just finishing Shas Mishnayos. That's a tremendous simcha. the simcha is we're celebrating this evening the people who've chosen life, and I have to say by extension, and it's some people say this, and you know it just sounds like they're saying it, but you know I definitely mean it. And the wives who sat home, because when you're home with a bunch of little kids, 10 minutes is a lifetime. There's no question about it. And you're like, no, honey, you stay. I'll hold down the fort. You know what I mean? You know the wives whose husbands have participated in this. What a tremendous chus it is for them. A bracha for the mishpachas and a bracha for the entire moshav, and really a bracha for all of Yisrael, because this is the inspiration that every one of us needs to be able to say, I'm choosing life. I'm choosing reality over the illusions of this world. And in that schus, Emir Tashem will be zoicha to get a base in Mikdash once again, where we can understand the schus we have to be able to bring those kavanos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be able to participate in that Ahavas Hashem and have the divash of life and all the goodness that comes with it. Mazel tov.